So at this stage, I would just like to let you know that this podcast is brought to you with the support of my supporters on Patreon at patreon.com/warhq. And at the moment, the roll call stands at Randy Wapper, Graham Hart, Rob Beckman, Lauren McLaren, Graham Thompson, and Phil Masson. War HQ Warriors, I salute you. Aloha everybody, it's Paul here. Welcome to the War Room Podcast. And today we are going to have a look at Campaign Stalingrad book. Now, you can see a more detailed run through on YouTube. If you go to the War HQ on YouTube, you can have a look at those. But we're probably going to try and attempt to do this run through on the podcast in about half an hour or so. So let's get started and open the book up. So the first thing we see is the contents. It's all fairly nicely laid out. We have a quick timeline, introduction to the offensive, the second battle of Kharkov, Case Blue, the pivot southward, etc. And then we go through each of the various battles and significant areas of the campaign, done in order that they happened more or less. It looks pretty good and well set out. There are several sections in the book, probably about 13 or 14, and in all we get another 22 scenarios that have been written to go with each of those. So it covers the approach to Stalingrad. I'm running through the sections here. The crossing of the Don, the dash to the Volga, the 4th Army's sudden thrust, the initial assault, southern Stalingrad, the charnel house, stalemate in southern Stalingrad, the factory district, the beginning of the end, and Der Kessel, the German response. Each of those sections mainly have two scenarios in them. I think one has one, and the sections at the end we're looking at 4, 3, and 3 scenarios. So quite a lot to get our teeth into. Now, previously being a competitive player, those of you who know me, the scenario section hasn't really interested me in a lot, but given that we spent a lot of time inside our houses in this 2020 due to a certain thing that cannot be mentioned, the COVID virus, I've spent a lot more attention, as I say, looking into scenarios and things that I can play in the house. Then after the section of the scenarios, we have a quick bit about the legacy, the aftermath, if you like, of the whole thing. And then we move on to the new units. There are some new Soviet units, some German units, and a tiny section of new Romanian units. Then we've got a few new options, and we've got the theatre selectors. Then we get the scenario special rules, and we finish off with what I think is the best book of the whole thing, and it's actually playing through a Stalingrad campaign with campaign rules, etc. I like the way the book set out initially, and so let's get in and have a quick look through. So the first thing they do is they give us a timeline in the book, which is very nice, although we've got one or two of the dates incorrect. Seems to finish up on February 1942, which should be 1943, I'm guessing. And it starts, a couple of little things, but we know and love that with Warlord books, don't we, guys? So, the prelude deals with a bit of who the various armies were, the planning of the offences, etc. What I do like about this book is in this book we get several sort of campaign maps which give you a good idea of the geography we're talking about. I'm not so sure before I read this book I was exactly sure the positioning of Stalingrad, so that's nice. And it's they've got clear directions on the German offensive, which follows into the Russian defence. And there are several maps. There's two in there to start with. And I like that very much. I don't think I've seen campaign maps in other books, but that might be just because I haven't spent a lot of time reading through the campaigns. So this, as I say, takes us through the lead up and takes us through significant parts. It is a potted history because we are short for space, but for those, it's a good general synopsis, especially for those of us who don't particularly want to get seriously into the history of things, but they want a good overall general view, and I think it makes that, it does a really good job of that in this book. So we go on, a little bit more history, which takes us into the scenarios and the approach to Stalingrad and the fight for the Don bridgeheads. Now, all of the scenarios are set out in the same basic way. They have an opening few paragraphs, gives you the immediate history of that part of the campaign that they're looking at, and then they move on and they set out the scenarios in a fairly logical way, giving you the objective, the setup, any special rules that are to be followed in that particular scenario, the forces that they recommend you use, the deployment of those forces, the game duration, the victory, and there's always a map showing the preferred or recommended setup for the table and the deployment zones. It's all done very nicely. Starting at last to get the hang of this. Most of the language for each of the scenarios is, they use the same language for each scenario. There's a couple of odd things which shows that slightly different people have worked on this, but I like it an awful lot. And then right at the end of that, in each scenario, they give you a couple of paragraphs to tell you, and because this action happened and the result of it, this is what it led up to. This was the result of the action in real life. However, as in bolt action with everything else, bolt action happens, and what happened in real life doesn't always happen on the bolt action table. So we've got to play through those. So I like them very much. The diagrams are very simple. They do have a grid on there marking out the square feet, as it were, which makes it easier for you to set out your scenery if you're trying to replicate these in any way. So I also like that. And it does go through, it gives us the little top secret boxes. If you're aware of those, every so often there'll be a box with a grey masthead that says top secret and a sort of very light khaki, camo, green box, which will give you something like, you know, a special character or a special note or a special rule. It would be nicer if we had an index at the back of these books to allow us to get to the rules more easily. And I noticed this one doesn't have an index. It's got contents at the front, but it doesn't have an index. So that's one of the things I'd really love to see the guys at Warlord and Osprey introducing is indexes into these books. However, so we carry on through those. They're not all to be played, I don't think. I'm just trying to look through it at the moment. Don't think they're all played on 6x4, but in general they are played on 6. But there's a few smaller scenarios, if I remember rightly. I'm just flicking through the pages now. Stalingrad besieged. I really would just want to stick to the parts in this which are significant and stand out to me in this book. So the next section that really stands out is going to be the new units that are in the book. Now, several new units in the book. Nice things in there for the Russian players. it's a shame that there's not more in there for Romanian players and some of the other nationalities that are involved. So that was a little disappointing, but overall I think they've done a pretty good job. So the new Soviet units, we have a couple of new commissars that you can use, the Frontnik commissar and the Politruk. Now, the Politruk is regular, 30 points. He has the rule, inspiring rhetoric. Aside from watching the political disloyalty, the Politruk also helped to train and boost the confidence of new soldiers. Inexperienced squads within 6 inches of the Politruk do not suffer the -1 penalty for being inexperienced. Now, I quite like that. I should make that clearer. It's the -1 to hit penalty. So it means that your inexperienced troops are hitting on the full base of 3 rather than 4 for being inexperienced. Now, the Frontnik commissar is 40 points regular, slightly more expensive, but he gets the not one step back rule from the armies of the Soviet Union. So a little bit more expensive, but can do a few more things. And he can also usually take the usual bodyguards with him. I like both of these commissars. Just something a wee bit different. And makes your... effectively upgrades your inexperienced infantry. The squad does have to be within 6 inches of the of these commissars. So you just want to watch out for that. And then the... I suppose the... one of the main things in the new units is the new sniper units. Now we've got two new sniper units, sniper detachment or a Zaichata squad, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Both are fairly expensive, so let's start off with the sniper detachment. It's veteran infantry for 65 points. For that you get an NCO and 4 men. However, if you want to have sniper rifles, up to 2 men can have sniper rifles for plus 30 points. Ah, no, I was thinking that was 30 points for each sniper rifle. Perhaps that is... yes, I think it is 30 points per sniper rifle. It isn't absolutely clear. What it says is up to 2 men can have a sniper rifle for 30 points. For each sniper rifle included, one of the other men become a spotter. So I think it's 30 points per sniper rifle. That might cause some dissent among the ranks. But they get the special rule, sniper detachment fire. And what that means is, on a fire order, decide whether all models in the unit will fire their weapons normally, or the unit will use its sniper rifles. If you decide the latter course, so firing the sniper rifles, only the sniper rifle armed models can fire. They must target the same enemy unit and declare the models they are targeting before firing is resolved. This can be the same model or 2 separate models in the target unit. So, brief summary of that is you're getting 5 veteran infantry figures with sniper rifles that are going to cost you 125 points, cheaper than buying 2 snipers. So I think I can see people wanting to use this unit. Now the other squad is the Zaichata squad. It's regular infantry this time, 120 points, and there's only 3 men, NCO and 2 men, and they come armed with sniper rifles. So approximately the same cost, but you're getting less men, and these guys are regular. So their special rules are Master and Zaichata. One sniper is the Master Sniper, and the other 2 are Zaichata in training. The Master Sniper should be differentiated in some way and acts as the NCO. If the Master Sniper is killed, the quality of the squad drops to inexperienced, as the 2 Zaichata no longer have veteran guidance to rely upon. in addition to the normal morale penalty for losing the NCO. However, should both Sichatta be removed from play and only the Master Sniper remains, his quality will upgrade to veteran. So, fairly straightforward there. Team spotting on a fire order, you decide who will fire. The Master Sniper or the Zaichatter. The other acts as a spotter and may not fire. If the Zaichatter fire, they must target the same enemy unit and declare the models they are targeting before firing is resolved. This can be the same movement, the same model, or two separate models in the target unit. So, to be honest, you're never going to use the Master Sniper over the two Zaichatter, are you? So, again, fairly straightforward. I think I would prefer to have five veteran infantry with sniper rifles for 125 points. Just my take on it, but you might think something different. So those are two of the new units which give a little bit of flavour. We've got a student officer squad, basically five inexperienced guys for 50 points, but they can be they are fanatic and they are green, so you've got 50 inexperienced fanatics. You can take another six of them for 10 points each. So yeah, that's an interesting inexperienced fanatics, good for holding objectives, etc. Now this is the next unit is the unit that I'm particularly excited about, because I would use these, expensive, but anyway, it's Storm Group. Now, Storm Group, you can take regular veteran, 56 points regular and 68 points veteran. It's a four-man squad, one NCO, three men. They come armed with SMGs, and you can have an additional four men, so a maximum eight-man squad, and you can equip them with anti-tank grenades, as all the units are, really. Now, they have the rules armed to the teeth, and the meat of this means that whenever this unit initiates close quarters combat with an enemy unit, the enemy cannot take advantage of defensive position rule. Storm groups always attack first in any close quarters fight they initiate. So, these guys can storm a house and assault, and they will fight first. Enemy behind a wall, these guys will fight first. Attacking into rough ground, these guys will fight first. Now, expensive though they are, they're 56 points at regular and 68 points at veteran for the four men. You can do the extra four for 14 points for the regular each and 17 points for the veteran each. I like these a lot, expensive. I would love to have an army of these. But that's just me. So really the two sniper groups and the storm group are the main things here. Another little interesting thing, we get Tank Factory T-34, which is 140 points, but it's only inexperienced. It's got the same usual armament. It's got the medium anti-tank gun with the coaxial MMG and the hull-mounted MMG, 9-plus tank. But you choose to take... you can choose to take one of three rules. You can either take no optics, which reduces your range to 36 inches instead of 60 inches, which I think is probably the one most people will take. Hastily repaired, some knocked out T-34s were towed, blah blah. Whenever this vehicle would suffer superficial damage, it instead suffers full damage. And then you could take factory workers rule. This unit must pass the Norder test to perform any action, even if it has no pins. So you must declare before the game starts which one of those rules you have. So it's only 140 points, but you have to take a bit of a negative to how you can use it, and it's only inexperienced. But I like it, something a wee bit different, it's not too complicated, it's not going to fool anybody, adds a bit of excitement. And that's basically your new Soviet units. The Germans have got a few new units, Anything particularly exciting? Well, we've got an alarm unit, inexperienced, 48 points for an NCO and 5 men. You can add 4 men with rifles for 8 points a man. So they've got the rule ad hoc equipment. So before deployment begins, roll a d6 for each alarm unit and consult the chart to see what weaponry the squad has scavenged. On a 1 to 3, they get nothing. They just remain equipped solely with rifles. On a 4, they get submachine guns. You remove 3 riflemen from the squad and replace them with 3 models armed with SMGs. There's a wee mistake in there. But I think it's remove 3 riflemen from the squad and replace them with 3 models armed with SMGs. Or on a 5 to 6, they get a light machine gun. Remove 3 riflemen and replace it with 1 model armed with an LMG. Another soldier becomes a loader. So, something a wee bit interesting. Inexperienced squad, can't see many of them getting taken. You get Panzergrenadier squads, pretty much the same. Jaeger squad, you can take the Mountaineer special rule for 1 point per model, well worth it, and this unit treats rough ground as open terrain. Now I need to have a look at my books again, because I quite like the idea of this Mountaineer's rule. But if I remember in the books, the Mountaineer's rule is they only ignore rocky ground, and it states you have to decide with your opponent beforehand what counts as rocky ground. So it's a bit of a mishmash for competition, but using this unit out of this book, the rule states the squad may have the Mountaineer rule for 1 point per model, and it states that Mountaineers, this unit treats rough ground as open terrain, not rocky ground. So I quite like that, and I would definitely think about these as a cheap option for Storm Group. Perhaps not quite the same, but it allows you to attack into to assault into rough ground for your normal 12 inches, and at 50 points regular for an NCO and 4 men, and 10 points per man extra. I think that's well worth those points. We've got a Croatian Legion squad. Now they're 50 points regular, 1 NCO, 4 men, up to 5 additional, but they get the Croatian Pride special rule. Croatian units use all German Army special rules, except that instead of initiative training Army special rule, all Croatian legions have Croatian Pride. When this unit passes any U-man snap to action order, you can remove 2 pins instead of 1. Now, I quite like that, and it works quite well with the German Army having the officer with the extra snap to action action on him. So I rather like that quite a lot. And again, yeah, something different. I think a lot of people felt that the Germans didn't get a lot, but I think they're probably getting about the same as the Russians, to be honest. And then they have various boats which are really to be used in the campaigns that you can have. Not much interesting there. And then the new Romanian unit is an R1 tankette. Not very exciting, to be honest. 60 points in experience, 75 points regular, no veteran option. Turret mounted MMG, hull mounted MMG, and they have the overworked driver rule. It also has recce on it, but it has the overworked driver rule. So the R1 cannot fire the hull-mounted MMG if it has made a run or advance move this turn. The driver is too busy steering the tank to operate the machine gun. Eh. Might find some use, I guess. So that was the new units. I quite like the new units. I even quite like the new German units now that I've read it yet again. And then we move on to a section on new options, which is basically messengers, demolition charges, and rifle grenades, rifle grenade adapters. Messenger, I quite like the look of. Lieutenants may upgrade one of their accompanying soldiers to a messenger for plus 10 points. Captains and majors can upgrade two for 20 points each. They have three special rules. If an officer is accompanied by a messenger, the unit is ordered to fire. The unit may use the relay orders ability instead of firing their weapons. If it does so, the range of the officer's morale bonus and you men snap to action ability doubles for the rest of the turn. So for a first or a second lieutenant, that would be 12 inches instead of the normal 6. So I quite like that. That's the relay orders option. You can have the preferred target special rule. Sorry, all of these are there. So you have the relay orders rule, you have the preferred target. Preferred target means that any enemy unit with an ambush order that can draw line of sight to the unit may choose to flip their dice to a fire order and resolve a shooting attack immediately against that unit, as if they had moved. So that's a bit of a downside to having messengers. And it's a one-use only rule, so each time an officer uses this relay orders ability, replace one of the messenger models in the unit with a standard infantryman. The messenger is spent and their ability cannot be used again. So, I'm not so sure I'd be inclined to use this with lieutenants, but I might be more inclined to take a captain or a major, because that would increase their area of ability from 12 inches to 24 inches for snap tuets. And of course, if you had a captain in the German army, you would be getting 4 snap tuets. Probably means you can use it on most of your army are going to be within a 24 inch radius. So I can see that being more use, and of course you can keep your captain and his two messengers behind blocking line of sight to protect them from those snipers because they have the preferred target rule. So I could see that being used. So I quite like that. Demolition, I'm just having a bit of a look to see who lieutenants, to see what officers you can use that messengers on. Doesn't actually say, because demolition charges say it's a new option for pioneer and assault engineers. One man may be equipped with demolition charges for 5 points in addition to his other weapons. So this one's quite complicated, really. But it gives you rules where you can set a charge and you get a 4-inch blast template, so like a heavy howitzer. So I quite like that. What I do like about it is it can be used against tanks, etc., if you can get this guy to him and get the demolition charge off. Or you could basically bring down a house with it. So, at 5 points, for 5 points, I would take it. But I think it's going to be very situational is whether you can do that. Now, rifle grenade adapters is a new option for any German infantry squad. It costs £20, I wish. It costs 20 points per adapter. And up to 2 men can replace their rifles with a rifle grenade adapter for 20 points a man. It basically gives you a range of 6 to 18 inches. So, kind of a medium mortar with slightly less range, I guess. It's indirect fire, HE 1 inch, and they can fire smoke. So I can see people taking these, but I don't know whether you're better off taking light mortars than these. Pros and cons, 20 points, I can see the odd one of those springing up. And that's the options. But then we get a few new theatre selectors. Most of the theatre selectors are really to go with the campaigns. They have the Don Volga reinforced platoon, nothing much there. The Tractor Factory reinforced platoon for the Soviets. They have the makeshift defence forces rule, which basically says that you can replace the free inexperienced rifle squad with either an inexperienced Tractor Factory T-34 or two free inexperienced 37mm AA guns. Yeah, so I could see some people making use of that. The getting two free inexperienced 37 AA guns means you're getting two dice for your free slot. I can see some people wanting to make use of that, and you can take two other factory T-34s. So you could get three factory T-34s in that army. So yeah, I can see people maybe using that. Not a step back reinforced platoon. Let's have a look. Nothing particularly exciting in there, other than you can't take any transports. Don't like that. They have off the map battery. So Soviet players are not allowed to take artillery units. Instead, to represent the considerable firepower amassed on the eastern bank of the Volga, forward observers taken in this list may order a second artillery strike after the first strike has been resolved. And if I remember rightly, Soviet national rules allow you to roll two dice and take the highest of those when you're rolling for the area of effect. So it'll be 6 inches plus the higher of 2d of, yeah, plus the higher of the 2d6 you roll. And you can be fanatics at plus 3 points per model. So again, you could get inexperienced fanatics in this army. So again, I like that quite a lot. Yeah, I like that a lot. Just have a look. Now, I can see a slight challenge with this. It says you can take no artillery units. I think what they meant to say was you can take no howitzer units, because they allow you to take one anti-tank gun or a field gun or an anti-aircraft gun, which I don't quite understand, to be honest. Seems to be a bit of a contradiction there. But, you know, we'll see how that plays out. Yeah, but now, this is the one that I quite like. It's the No Land Beyond the Volga Reinforced Platoon. And this one allows you to take up to three storm group squads, which we've talked about. I like that quite a bit. Again, no transports. It's off-map battery, which is the forward observer getting two strikes, and the fanatical defence, the plus three fanatics, plus 3 points per model for fanatics. So I like that a fair bit. We've still got the same contradiction with the off-map battery saying no artillery units, and yet they're specifying you can take artillery. Yeah. We'll see how that one works out. Probably wouldn't take artillery in that list anyway. If you listen, I've got a podcast going up either very shortly before or after this podcast, and I did a list using this and I didn't take artillery in it. Looking at Pavlov's house. And then we've got a Soviet cavalry troop, which I quite like the look of. It's fairly standard, and it allows you to take an inexperienced T-60 or T-70 instead of the free rifle squad. So that's quite nice, thematic, I like it. Uranus tank platoon, nothing very much in there, just allows you to take a free T-60 or 70 instead of the free infantry unit again. Uranus forward detachment platoon, again another armoured platoon. They have a forward detachment special rule, which gives you rules for carrying troops. Looks like half your detachment must have transport rather than the whole lot. I could have that wrong. And then we've got an anti-tank battery, which just allows you to take two artillery pieces and two vehicles. But the compulsory units are one lieutenant and two artillery units from 45 model 1937 as is 3 or a 70 or a 37mm 61k 39 gun. So that allows you to have massed artillery if artillery is your thing. You would be able to take four pieces of artillery from that, actually, so that would be interesting. The Ziz-3s are quite good. Would be interesting to see how four Ziz-3s would do against a list. And then we've got the Flame Tank Brigade, allowing you to take two OT-34s. In fact, you could take four OT-34s. I could see some people looking into that. Transports, nothing else terribly exciting there. And then we get the lists for Germany. Gates of Stalingrad, reinforced platoon, no special rules, nothing in particular, just restricts you to certain units that were there. The Stalingrad Armoured Kampfgruppe, reinforced platoon. Yeah, a special rule is Panzertruppe in a truck or SDKFZ 2511 must be chosen as transport for each Panzer Grenadier squad. It's the same as you would get in any armoured platoon, which this is. Slightly different compulsory section. Your first or second lieutenant, you must choose a Panzer Grenadier squad and you must choose a vehicle from Panzer 2, 3, 4. Or a Stug 3 allows you to take yet another, so you get two heavily armoured vehicles into that list. Interesting, slightly different. Rattenkrieg reinforced platoon, they have the assault gun support. To represent the availability of these armoured infantry support vehicles, two can be chosen to take up the tank slot. So you can take one vehicle from sort of Flampanzer, Panzer 2, 3, 4, and some others, or you can choose two Stug 3s. Interesting. Fortunately, you can't take two Stug 33s. Rawr. But there we go. What we got? Into Hell, reinforced platoon. This one you can take two Jaeger squads, quite like that, as your compulsory. You can take, it's the same as the last list, you can take a tank from, you know, Flampanzer, Panzer 2, 3, 4, a couple others, or you can take two Stug 3s, but you could take Stug 33Bs in this one. Can see that appealing to some people. Yes, I can see that appealing to some people. 22nd Panzer Division, nothing particularly different in that. Armoured Platoon, yep, straightforward. Panzer Corps Armour Platoon, yeah, pretty straightforward, really. Alarm Heightened Reinforced Platoon, you've got to take alarm units, which we've touched on before, and they have the Desperate Measures Special Rule. Any infantry unit within the selector can purchase anti-tank grenades for 1 point per model instead of the normal cost of two. So, yeah, I could see some people doing that, and you can take two artillery guns as well. So, yeah, it's got its uses. Thunderclap reinforced platoon, fairly straightforward, nothing special, but they have the bring only what you can carry rule. This list can only take artillery units with guns that can be manhandled. So you're only getting the light and medium options. There isn't too many there anyway. You've got light field artillery. You haven't got light field artillery. You've got light anti-tank gun, a PAK 36 or a Panzerbeusch 41 are your only selections anyway. Not sure I could see many people using that. Then you've got Romanian Armoured Division, which just introduces that new vehicle, I would imagine. It doesn't, actually. Panzer 35T, Panzer 3, or a Panzer 4, but allows you to take a Romanian Panzer Division, basically. Yeah, that's interesting, but not that great. Or a Romanian Cavalry Troop. It gives you basically a cavalry list with your compulsory sections being cavalry units. You can get two vehicles though from the R1 tankette, the 222 or the 223. And you can of course mount your HQ. So that kind of basically covers that. They then move on to the section scenario special rules. Gives you rules for constant bombardment, snow, digging in, fuel shortages, ammunition shortages, supply drops, etc. We've seen most of these rules before. Some rules for city fighting. Gives you an extra bit of flavour to look out. Then we get to my favourite bit in the whole book, and that is the Stalingrad campaign section, which gives you rules for playing campaigns. They give you an introduction as to what's they're trying to achieve by this and a quick overview, and then it gives you overall campaign rules for doing the campaigns, tells you about the maps, the objectives, turn sequences, selecting territories and scenarios, how to play bolt action matches. It gives you the campaign map, which cuts into eight areas of the Stalingrad campaign, each of which you can fight over. So a good campaign map tells you how to determine the ownership of the territories, and each of the territories there's certain scenarios you're going to play in them, and how to assign the victory points that you're going to add to your victory point tracker. And then we move on, there's four ways to play the campaign. And this, each is set out in a similar way, apart from the very last one. They all tell you the length, the recommended number of players, the setup, the victory conditions for either the Germans or the Soviets, and at the bottom of the page they give you a campaign tracker to allow you to keep score and tally of the campaign. Now the first campaign is the Grand Stalingrad campaign. Its length is approximately 15 games and recommended for about 4 to 8 players. Now the thing I like about the campaigns is that not all the players have to turn up for every session that you're going to run. So if you're playing this in clubs or at stores, at your local game store, you know, if not everybody can get there every week, it doesn't matter. They've made provision that you'll just play with who's there on the day, as it were. So the first one there was the Grand Stalingrad campaign. The next campaign is the attack on the factory district. It's approximately 8 games in length and recommended for between 2 to 6 players. And then there's the campaign, the final onslaught. Approximately 4 games, recommended for 2 players. So ideal if you play every week with your pal, or there's only maybe 2 of you at the club that play bolt action, or you know, you've got a regular player in the store that you play with every so often. This could be the ideal little campaign for yourselves. Love it a lot. And then at the end they've got suggestions on how you can play a 2-player variant for larger campaigns. So those of you that are wanting to play that much bigger campaign but there's only 2 of you, you've got something for you too. And for me, that this final section makes the whole book completely worth it, even if it wasn't before. Overall, as you can tell, I rather like this book from start to finish, especially now that I am more into the campaign scenarios. And I could see myself playing these. In fact, something that we might do for the YouTube at some stage down the line is to start playing the campaign games right the way through if I can find all the models. So, you know, certainly given me a bit of food for thought, and certainly very impressed with the book. Yes, there are the odd errors in it, but we forgive those errors, and I liked it a lot. Think it's well worth the £20 or so that you're going to pay for it in UK money anyway. And I think it would be a fantastic addition to your bolt action or wargaming libraries. So yes, I would definitely go out and buy it. It got the War Room 5-star seal of approval. So I think that's us finished up. So take care, guys. Mahalo from me. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Just before you go, a bit of a favour to ask. Totally understand if you don't want to become a patron, but if you could just do me a favour, it's for free. Go to iTunes or wherever you get the podcast, and if you could give me a 5-star rating and a glowing review, I'd really appreciate that. It would boost us right up the charts. I know it's really tiresome, but I'd be ever so grateful if you could do that for me. Thank you, and mahalo. You can get in touch with us on patreon.com/warhq or at warhq.co.uk@gmail.com or on Facebook at warhq.co.uk. You can get in touch with us on patreon.com/warhq or at warhq.co.uk@gmail.com or on Facebook at warhq.co.uk.